today. Okay, so in the psukim that you have in front of you, I know we've read this psukim, but I just wanted to do one more insight on a psukim that we read last week. That's why we'll repeat the psukim. And the psukim starts, V'ulam, right? It says on top of your page, V'ulam, Chai Ani, right? That's in psukim Chof Aleph, so it's Perek Yud Aleph, psukim Chof Aleph. V'ulam Chai Ani, this is what Hashem says, V'yimolei Kvoyit Hashem Es Kol Ha'aretz, and the glory of Hashem shall fill the entire world. It's a funny language, but what it sounds like Hashem is saying is that it's like he's promising, it's like a swear. And I am found everywhere, and therefore whatever I say, I can definitely do, and whatever I say, I will do. So in other words, I am upset with the Jewish people, they have done something so against me, so if I say that I'm going to punish them, I will punish them. But these words, this phrase of Yimalei Kvayit Hashem Es Kol Ha'aretz, that the glory of Hashem fills the entire earth, is explained in depth very beautifully, and I just want to show you inside. So now, those sheets that the other ones, the Mefarshim ones that don't have the English on it. So if you could look at them for a minute, I want to show you something beautiful here. Okay, see two ways to explain, not two, also just a layered to explain it in depth, and then we're going to go further into the psukim today. So V'yimolei Kvayit Hashem, first you have bracketed there Haksav, that's the first one. So simply what we're saying here is the fact that Hashem was able to give parnasa, in other words, to sustain thousands upon thousands of souls, bilechem shamayim, with bread from the heavens in the desert, b'derech nes, in a miraculous way, v'chalkalein b'mon arba'im shana, he gave them mon for 40 years, v'chei, not only that, posach lahem tzur, he opens up a rock for them, v'zuvu ha'meimav, and all the water came flowing out, b'derech nifla, in a miraculous, wondrous way, v'chein b'chol meshech zman zeh, and all throughout this time so far, they've only been there about a year, and then it will continue, but the entire time since they've been taken out of Egypt, they had a cloud of Hashem in front of them by day and at night. So the fire at night, v'ein l'cha pirsum kveit Hashem b'olam yoser mizeh. There's no greater publicity for Hashem in the world than this. So when Hashem says, Vayimalei Kvayit Hashem, that the glory of Hashem filled the earth, what he's saying is it's obvious to everybody that I am the one that fills the earth, that I, my presence is here, that I run the world, and that I can do miracles, or I can run the world naturally. So it's just, in a sense, almost a statement which is an obvious fact, but Hashem is saying, it's for sure, and therefore you know that my word has power, that my promise has the ability to be fulfilled. But then, let's see it a little bit deeper. This is actually an interesting, it's a fascinating message that has to do with the fact that the Jewish people just now complained, as we know, they did such a terrible sin, and because of that, they won't be able to enter Israel, and they were supposed to enter Israel. So Hashem is saying something very interesting. Because you have sinned, and you will not enter the land of Israel, rather you will spend 40 years in the desert, and then, we'll see in a minute, there'll be even more unfolding, my presence becomes known even more in the world. How? So let's see what the Malbim says. So the Malbim says, Vayimalei Kvayit Hashem, ki kaidem chet ha-meraglim. If the Jewish people had not done the sin of the meraglim, right? In other words, if everything had gone according to the original plan, Haya Moshe nichnas la'aretz, Moshe would have entered into the land, v'haya b'ina ha-mikdash, and he would have built the Beis ha-mikdash, v'haysa az ge'ula shleima v'tikun ha-klali, then it would have been the ultimate full redemption, and everything would have been fixed. In other words, the world would have been in its most complete, so to speak, shape and form, and everything would be like at the best level. Shaloi haya ha-mikdash nechrav l'aylam, the Beis ha-mikdash would never ever be able to be destroyed forever and ever. It would be like perfection would have hit. V'loi haya oid shum galus, there would be no exile afterwards. Amnam, but this one interesting thing that would have been if that would be the case sounds so amazing, but interestingly enough, even though that sounds like that was the original plan, it still has a bit of a lack. What's the lack? What wouldn't have been accomplished? Amnam tikun hazeh Lo-yo-yo oz rak li-Yisrael. That fixing, that completion would have only been for the Jewish people and not for the rest of the world. But lom achach et ha-meraglim, after they did the sin of the meraglim, shenigzara az al-Moshe. So what unfolded, there's a lot of different, like it's like a domino effect. What happens then is that it's also decreed on Moshe that he will not enter the land, even though we know he wasn't punished specifically for the sin. But the truth is that the gezeira on Moshe already started over here. Then he did the hitting of the rock afterwards, right? But already over here, it was decided that Moshe is not going into the land of Israel. And it says, K'moshe Amar Hazal, Shandikvar Moshe b'chutz la'aretz. Moshe was buried out of Eretz Yisrael. Why? K'dei sheyavai imay dar hamidbar la'asid lavai. One of the reasons that Moshe couldn't go into the land of Israel, this is quite incredible, is because he had to remain with us, so to speak, with the Jewish people who were out of the land of Israel, his generation, the generation of the desert. In other words, he's a faithful shepherd till the end. And when Mashiach comes, he will take them with him into the land of Israel. So he can't enter until it's time for them also to enter. So he had to remain out of the land of Israel. And therefore, Vakibush loy hayon nisi al yidei Hashem. And then we know, and this is actually what unfolded, the way that they conquered the land wasn't so miraculous as it would have been had Moshe gone in with them. Instead, Yeshua took them in, and it was obviously there were miracles, but it was miracles that were clothed in nature, right? Real wars they had to fight, and people did die in some of the wars, and there was a lot of different things that happened that were difficult in those wars. Had Moshe taken them in, it would have been like miraculous of like Yericha, you know, like the walls just fall down and everybody would have ran, but that's not what happened. So what do we say? Al Kain loy higia oz eis hatikun haklali hamikavesh sheyihi ela osid. So it didn't yet reach that completion, which we hope, which will be in the future. V'nish'aru harbe amamin. So therefore what happened was, it wasn't miracles. And when they entered the land of Israel, many nations remained. Shaloi kafshu, that they didn't conquer. V'hinicham Hashem l'naseh, says Yisrael. Hashem left them there on purpose. Like we know the Philistines, right? And they caused so much trouble. Remember the time of Shimshon? And it was terrible times. And it was there to test the Jewish people. This is all part of, unfortunately, the ramifications of the sin that they're doing over here, their lack of trust in Hashem that they display here. Ad ha'itim shecharvu ha'mikdashos, until the time when the Beis HaMikdash were actually destroyed. V'Yisrael nispazru la'arba ruch ha'shamayim, and we know the Jewish people were spread to the four corners of the world, even all the way here to Australia. V'chol zahaya hachana l'tzeirich ha'tikun ha'klali, this is all to prepare for the ultimate completion, for the ultimate highest level of fixing, of literally making the world in a perfect state. When will that be? Sheyihye ba'achris hayam. That will be at the end of time. She'az yepach el amim sofa brura likrai kulam b'shem Hashem. The prophet tells us at that time, the nations of the world, their language even will change, and they will all call in the name of God. B'zenasal yidei golius Yisrael. How does it happen? Because the Jewish people find themselves in Golos, and they are spread amongst the nations. Now, the next commentary explains it a little bit, extends it just a little more. So if you go a little further, we won't read the whole thing. If you go, let me just see. Okay, I'll just read quickly from where it says, where it's the line is there on the side. So it says, Kishi Yismali Kved Hashem, right, when the glory of Hashem fills the whole earth, Mimikze ha'aretz ad k'tzeyu, from one end of the earth to the other. V'remez lazeh bazeh la'idiyai. So this is hinting to tell us, ki al pi gzeirazu, that according to this gzeira, in other words, through this decree is what brought tiyasiba, it actually causes, sheyemalei k'fayit Hashem kol ha'aretz, that the glory of Hashem fills the entire earth. Why? And because of this, so Hashem says, because of that, I cannot overcome. I cannot, like, so to speak, vatronis, you say, I can't, like, say it's not going to happen. I can't, like, forgive almost. And I can't relinquish control and say, okay, I won't punish them. I'll just let them all go into the land of Israel. No, Hashem says, I can't do that. Because now there's a different trajectory. And there's a different way that I want to get to the purpose and to the ultimate completion of the purpose of the world. As he says, and to forgive the Jewish people, machmas hamidas, because of the 13 attributes. And he says, what is that? So now he explains why. Why can't Hashem? So he quotes from Tehillim. There's a chapter in Tehillim, chapter 106, where David HaMelech actually mentions in chapter 106 a lot of the things that happened to the Jewish people in the desert. And amongst them, he says very interesting language. He says, Vayisa yaday lahem, and Hashem lifted his hand, lahapil oisam bamidbar, he wanted to destroy them in the desert, ulahapil zaram begoyim, ulzaroisam ba'aratzais, and to make their descendants fall amongst all of the nation and to spread them amongst all of the countries. Shemizan nigzar, because what this means is that at this point, it's not what we see openly is the gezerah, the decree that they're not going to live, right? These from age 20 to 40, they're not going to go into the land of Israel. But what's a hidden gezerah here is that the Jewish people are going to actually have to be spread all over the world to all four corners of the earth. That will happen throughout the time of exile. And what will happen? And then we say, Nigla be'emes kvayit Hashem. And then, take, the glory of Hashem will be revealed through the Jewish people. Interesting question, though. What would have happened had they not sinned? How would that have been accomplished? Let's say the Jewish people would have gone into the land of Israel now. Then how would Hashem's glory be spread throughout the earth? So he says something very fascinating. Had the Jewish people entered the land of Israel now, they would have been entering it in a way where they were full of trust, right? They wouldn't have displayed a lack of trust. Therefore, and as we say, Moshe would have taken them in, it would have been totally miraculous. Not only that, but what kind of method would Hashem be working with them? What type of life would they be leading? A miraculous life, right? When you display absolute bitachin, so who do you get everything directly from? It's like mida keneged mida. You display that you trust, you believe that Hashem is the one who gives you everything. So Hashem gives you everything in a revealed way. So it doesn't even go through nature. So everything happens miraculously. So he says, had that been the case, then everything that would have happened to the Jewish people in the land of Israel would have been so miraculous that it would have spread, the miracles would have been known all over the world. And like, so to speak, by remote control, the whole world would have come to the glory of Hashem. You wouldn't have needed that the Jewish people should physically go and live amongst the nations. They would have heard the miracles, and that would have already tuned them in and lifted them to realize there is one God, and they would have all come to that recognition. However, we displayed lack of trust, which means that now we operate in a natural way. That's what we're choosing almost, right? We're choosing nature because we're saying there's no God running, right? Not no God, but he's running through nature. That's what it means that we're lacking trust. Well, then Hashem does run through nature. When that happens, if the Jewish people remain in Israel and they don't go amongst the nations, it's true, they could recognize God, but the other nations won't recognize God. But what will, yes, happen? And he says something very fascinating. If the Jewish people do physically get spread out, which is what happens, there's something very interesting, and this is a fascinating thing to think. When we live amongst the nations, and we know when we look back in history, it's easier to see it in a bigger scale, we realize that even though Hashem is working in a natural way, because our lives are not open miracles, nevertheless, underneath it, right up beneath the surface, our life is a miracle. The fact that we are still here is a miracle, as we know, because they've tried to get rid of us so many times. So even our natural existence, so to speak, but the fact that we continue to exist already spreads godliness throughout the world. So when we chose, so to speak, to work in the natural order, we had to go amongst the nations. And when we're amongst the nations and they are unable to get rid of us, both physically and spiritually, we still retain the fact that we are Jewish, the fact that we have one God, and we retain our values, and we spread godliness wherever we are just by being living examples. That's the way we spread Hashem throughout the world. So you see it interesting, the ramification of this sin is so global and so eternal, it affects up until today. That's why we live here in Australia, because they didn't trust and have to complain about it. It's true, that's what happens. Now we have to be here. And what that means is for us, though, we should reflect a little bit and think about the fact that we're here for a purpose. Therefore, we should be living our lives in a way which does display a level of trust in Hashem, and also obviously making a constant Kiddush Hashem, because that's the whole purpose, that we are here for Hashem's glory to be spread throughout the world. And that's what we represent. We represent Hashem, so to speak. We know that whether we like it or not, that's what happens, right? As soon as the Jew does anything bad, it's a disaster, right? Well, it should be. I mean, we shouldn't do anything bad, but we're held to a much higher standard. But of course, when we do good things, even though it takes time, slowly, slowly it seeps in and we have a positive effect. So very fascinating how these words show the effect of this thing, which they seems, and interestingly enough, we'll see in a minute, that even the Jewish people then didn't realize how bad it was what they did. Okay, Vayimalek, Vayit Hashem, the glory. Sure, sure, we'll fill the whole earth. Yes.
In
Lech
Lecha, yes, it says that the fourth generation will go into the land. Which generation?
Does it say the fourth? It's interesting it says the fourth. Because I guess it means like this. It was Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov.
No, Abraham. I think the fourth, that's how I interpreted, they went into Egypt, the fourth generation after that.
That's interesting, because I'm not sure. Well, there was, if you think about it, it's the generation that went into Egypt is the generation of the tribes, right?
Yes.
Yaakov's children,
yes.
Right? And then after that, let's say if you have Levi, and then you have Amram, Levi, Kehas, Amram, and Moshe. So Moshe is the fourth generation. Oh, but their children did. So that's, and they should have gone in. That's right. That's it. Very good, Sylvia. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Hashem said 400
years. And it ended up 210. Exactly. Very good. That's right. That's right. That makes sense. Yeah, it's true. It connects. It all. It's amazing. The Brisbane Hapsarim, definitely. Yeah, that was fascinating.
The fourth generation of those people that were in the desert already.
But it's more, you know what it is? It's more fourth generation from the people who went into Egypt. Not really in the desert yet. Because the desert's really considered, even though it's 40 years, so you could say two generations, but it's like one generation in a way. Because as soon as the desert people died, their children went in. So it's like sort of one. It's considered one generation. But in Egypt, they were there for 210 years. So I guess in those days, you call a generation much, much longer amount of time. Well, they lived longer. So, yeah. It's interesting. Even though Moshe only lived till 120, he didn't live so long. But it's not so long. Yes, yeah, so Aaron lived 123, I think it was. Yeah, yeah, they're all around the same. Him and Miriam and, yeah, 25 maybe.
So they were the fourth generation.
Yeah, exactly right. They are. They're the fourth generation from when they left Israel, and now they're returning to Israel because Yaakov left Israel. Jacob, right? Yaakov was...
They were the ones that left Egypt.
They were the ones that left Egypt, exactly. They should have been gone into the land right away. But boy, they made a bit of a detour. Okay, long detour. Okay, so now coming back to our psukim, because that's what I want to do is to read through the psukim. So what I would like to read now is, I think it's, let me just see if I remember which. Oh, there's one more thing that's also drop repetitive, but if you look into Pasuk Chaf Beis, which is, yeah, I think it's just on your first page there, right? On page 165. It says, Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. So it says, Ki kol ha'anoshim harayim es kvaydi, all the men who see my honor, my glory, ve'es oisoisai, and my signs, asher asisi b'mitzrayim, that I did in Egypt, uba midbar, and in the desert. And what does Hashem say? We read this last week. You tested me 10 times. It's like a parent who really has no more patience. I mean, 10 times is a lot of patience. 10 times you tested me. And you didn't listen to my voice. So I just wanted to show you, just quickly to see, what are the 10 times that the Jewish people actually tested Hashem in the desert. So if you look on, it's actually on the next page, it's on page 100 and, sorry, I'll tell you what page is it on top, 166. If you look on the bottom, Rashi brings it. The notes on the art scroll, they bring it. On page 166, note number one. What does it say there? So it goes through. What were the 10 tests? The first test at the sea took place when the Israelites showed a lack of trust in Hashem. What did they complain? They said, is it because there are not graves in Egypt, right, that you took us to die in the wilderness? Right? That's just when the Egyptians were behind them, the sea is in front of them, and they say, oh my gosh, why did you take us? Right? That's the first time. Then the second test is when afterwards, what does it say? They rebelled about the sea at the Sea of Reeds. What happened? Because after they crossed the sea, they demonstrated a lack of faith by saying, just as we are emerging from one side, right? The Egyptians are emerging from the other. Remember, that's what the Jewish people said, Nebuch. After the whole miracle that happened to them, they still were worried that there are Egyptians around, and they said they came out of the other side. That's the second test. Then we say more. Let's see. Then we come to the first test of the mon. Okay, so that's the third test. When they were commanded not to leave any of the mon over till the morning. Right, and then some of them left over to the morning, and then the next time when they were told not to gather on Shabbos, and some of them went out on Shabbos. Each time they're testing, they're not trusting. Right, that's the fourth test. They go out on Shabbos to get the mud. The other ones when they look, and then it says the two sins involving, they call it the pheasants. Remember the slav, the meat. Remember that fell from the heavens. It was twice that Hashem sent down meat for them. And then they asked, because they asked for meat in an ungrateful manner. And then the other four, two times they tested Hashem by complaining of lack of water, as we know in both in Shmos and then much later on. And then the sin of the golden calf. And of course, the tenth sin, which we say Hashem said, I had enough, it's reached boiling point, is the sin of the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. So here we have the 10 sins, so to speak, and they call it 10 times that the Jewish people actually are testing Hashem, and it's enough already. Okay, now let's just see. One more thing I wanted to show you about this Pasuk Chav Dalid. So it's on this page. On the top it says, I know we read Pasuk Chav Bezach, I just want to show you Pasuk Chav Dalid. It says, V'avdi Kalev, and my servant Kalev, Ekev, Haisa Ruach Acheres. So this is a very famous pasuk. There's even a song with these words. Since there was, he had a different spirit imay with him. Therefore, v'yemale acharei, and he followed me. V'hevisiv, so I will bring him el haaretz, to the land asher b'shama, that we will come there. V'zara yerishena, and his children, his descendants, will inherit it. So I saw a very beautiful pshat. What does it mean that Kalev had a ruach acheres, another spirit with him? So simply we say what it means is he was able to be different to the other spies, right? So they said one thing and he said another. Or he tricked them. He acted as if he was going to keep them. When he saw that he wasn't able to influence them, he realized the only chance he had was to hopefully influence the Jewish people. So how would he do that? By making believe he was on the side of the spies. And then, as we know, they allowed him to speak. And when he opened his mouth, he started to say such amazing things about Eretz Yisrael. So that's a ruach acheres, another spirit. But then there's another beautiful explanation that says that who is the ruach acheres? He had another spirit. He didn't just have his own, he had two spirits. What are two spirits? His own and his wife Miriam. Because he had the support of his wife Miriam, who was such a lover of Eretz Yisrael and a supporter of Moshe and Aaron, of course, and a trusting in Hashem. So that's the Ruach Acheres. The Ruach Acheres is that he had an extra spirit, another spirit, which went with him and encouraged him and gave him the strength, and that's talking about Miriam. So just a very beautiful thing to understand. Okay, now we go on back to page 167, right? So now we see, now we go into Pasuk Chav Hei. So, and now, as we mentioned last week, V'Amaleki V'Haknani Yoshev Be'emek, right? And the Amalek and the Knanim, they're living in the valley. Mochar, so tomorrow, Pnu U'Lachem Hamidbar, turn yourself to the desert, Derech Yamsuf, in the way of the Yamsuf. In other words, Hashem says, I won't be with you, Don't even think of fighting them. You will not be able to overcome. Because you don't have my support, you don't have my presence with you in a revealed way, don't even try it. And the reason he mentions specifically Amalek, we know, is because that's what makes them very afraid. So Hashem was hoping that they would listen to him now. They've made a massive mistake. Obviously, they're eager in a certain sense. They realize, and they want to, we'll see soon, they do want to enter the land of Israel, but it's too late now. They've messed up, and Hashem tries to make sure they're not going to continue. Rather, they're going to go through the desert. Now, we come to the words that now we come to the very specific punishment words. These are very harsh words. As we see, this is the, so to speak, the speech that Hashem gives about the Jewish people and why he comes to the punishment that he does. So now we've come into Pasuk Chavav. Vayidabra Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron lemer. So Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aaron saying, Ad Masai la'eda hara'a hazois. Very strong language. For how long? For this evil assembly. Asher heima malinim alai, that they constantly, what they're doing, they provoke to complain upon me. And what do they complain? As tlunos b'nei Yisrael, asher heima malinim alai shemati. So the complaints of the children of Israel, whom they provoke to complain against me, I have heard. In other words, interesting, he's targeting specifically the spies themselves, who were the ones who provoked the rest of the Jewish people to complain to Hashem. And he's very, very upset. But interesting language that he uses. I want to show you something. First he says, La'eda hara'a, right? This bad congregation. Fascinating. We learned something interesting. So Rashi says, what is La'eda hara'a? Elu hameraglim. These are the spies. And here we learn, Mikan, La'eda shehu asara, that the word Eda is a group of 10, which means, interesting, that's where we get the idea that there's a minion, there's two places, both negative, the 10 Shvatim who sold Yosef, and over here, the 10 spies that makes up a congregation. Why do we, it's interesting, it's such a negative thing, but the idea is that 10 is such, makes a more powerful group. And once you have that unit, everything you do has more effect, and that's why they get such a severe punishment. So it's quite interesting. Okay, let me see if there's any other Rashi here. Okay, no, let's see in the next pasuk. And then Hashem continues, and he's like really upset. You can see. So now he's going to say Emar Aleihem. So this is pasuk Chavches. So tell them. That's what Hashem is telling Moshe. Give them the message. Chayani, like Hashem is promising. No Hashem. Im like Kasher Dibarti Baazni Kain Eselachem. If I shall not do to you as you have spoken in my ears, what does that mean? What will happen? Bamidbar hazeh yiplu pigreichem. In this wilderness, and it's very strong language, shall your carcasses drop. In other words, you're all, well, we'll see exactly who, but most of you will die here in the desert. V'chol pukudeichem l'chol misparchem. So all of you who have been counted, all of the ones who have been numbered, Mi ben esrim shana v'mayla, those who are above the age of 20, asher halinoisem alai, whom you provoked against me. So we're not dealing specifically with the spies now. We're talking about the rest of the Jewish people, the men from the age of 20 to 60. And how do we know that? Because as he says, all of those who have been counted, all of the ones who have been numbered, what were they counted for originally? For the army. Right, remember, from the age of 20 to 60. Now Hashem says, well, all of those, now they're all in trouble. Because they were the ones who complained now, and they will actually die in the desert. As we know, unfortunately, that's what happens. As this is, all those who were counted, and also what that excludes is it excludes the tribe of Levi. Because you know the tribe of Levi wasn't counted from the age of 20, they were counted from the age of 1 month old. Do you remember when we did the original counting? And the reason, one of the reasons that Hashem counted the tribe of Levi separately was actually because of this. Because he knew that something bad would happen. All the people who were in that original census from 20 to 60 are the ones affected by this decree. and everybody else is not. So the woman and the younger children and the tribe of Levi, who obviously didn't join in and didn't sin, so therefore they are excluded. That's how the pasuk tells us. Okay, let's see. We go on. Let me just see. Sorry. I'm running up and down. Okay, let's see. Yeah, that's pasuk chof test. Now let's see pasuk lamid. Sorry, just want to see. Okay, so this is on page 169. So Hashem is like promising, and he says, if you shall come into the land, Asher Nasasiyas Yadi, which I have raised my hand, like as an oath, L'shakein Eschem, but to make you live there, no, you're not, right? In other words, it's unspoken words. You think you're going to get there? No way. But the only one who will get there, he in Kalev ben Yefuna, only Kalev, V'yashua bin Nun. Only those two. Now, why do we have to specify them? We know they didn't sin. So why are we even mentioning them here? So look what Rashi says, something very interesting. Does it say it here? No. Let me just see if it says it on the page before. No, it doesn't say it on the page. Okay, so it says it afterwards again. The reason that we are excluding Kalev specifically and Yeshua, now we know they were the ones who didn't sin, is because they don't only enter the land of Israel. You know what happens to them. They actually receive extra portion. They receive the portion, especially Kalev, that the other Meraglim were supposed to get, the spies themselves were supposed to get, and some of that goes to Kalev and Yeshua. So we highlight them that not only aren't they going to die, not only don't they get punished, but they get a special thing that they enter the land and they get an extra portion. Okay, and what else? V'tapchem asher amartem lavaz yihyeh. Remember how they spoke. And your young children, of whom you said they will be taken captive, what does Hashem promise? Those, ve'vesi yisam, those I will bring. V'yadu es haaretz, they will know the land. Asher ma'astem ba, the land that you have despised. But u'pigrechem, and Hashem is stressing, but your carcasses, asher yiplu ba'midbar hazeh, they will drop in this wilderness. Ubnechem yihyu royim bamidbar. And now Hashem details what's going to happen. Your children, and it's interesting the word royim, here they translate, will roam. They will sort of shepherd the desert. But it means that they will, as we know, they're going to travel through for arba'im shana, for 40 years. That's how long they're going to have to be in the desert for. And what will happen? V'nosu es nuseichem, and they will bear your guilt. In other words, it's because of you they can't enter immediately. Ad toim pigreichem bamidbar, until you all die in the desert. Now, just an important thing. Now read one more pasuk and then I'll show you something interesting. It sounds very, very harsh, but there's an underlying compassion here. Just look how he says in pasuk lamed dalid, b'mispar hayomim asher tartem es haaretz, according like the number of days that you spied out the land, arba'im yoim, yoim lashana, 40 days, that's how long it took them, as we know, to spy the land. So we make a year per day, tisu es avayneseichem, you shall bear your iniquity, arba'im shana, for 40 years, and then v'yedatem es tnu asi, and you shall know what parting from me, how difficult it is to part from me. And some people say, tnu asi, you will know my movement. If you spend 40 years in the desert, which is what Hashem wanted, and it's a year per day, the idea being that during those 40 years, you will spend time in a very spiritual place, learning from Moshe Rabbeinu Torah, and only after you're 60 will you die. What will happen is something actually quite amazing. It's actually such an incredible kind punishment that Hashem is giving them. First of all, he doesn't kill them right away. Well, we're not talking about the spies. We're talking about the rest of the people, right? We'll see what happens to the spies themselves. But you don't die right away. You don't die until you're 60. Something quite amazing. It says nobody died under the age of 60 in the desert. Nobody. So, I mean, that doesn't sound so amazing, but that's still something quite big. We're nobody, nobody. And not only that, that means that the Jewish people spent so many years in the desert with Moshe Rabbeinu, learning Torah, reaching the highest spiritual levels. It says that when a person learns Torah for 40 years, that's when they get wisdom and bina. When you learn for 40 years consecutively, well, it's not just consecutive, but 40 years, that's when you understand Torah and internalize and become truly connected to Hashem. And that's what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted them to elevate themselves and learn and spiritualize themselves. And this is what happened to them. So quite amazing thing. And that's why it says also in that other Rashi we didn't read, when it says about them that they all reached 60, you know how it worked? It was I think we mentioned it, but just very quickly, every year, Tisha B'Av, the anniversary, as we know, unfortunately at the time they cried, Moshe Rabbeinu would say to all the men who were turning 60 that year that they should dig a hole, they would lay down, and they would actually die. That's what would happen on Tisha B'Av. All the men turning 60 that year. What happened in the 40th year? So it wasn't 100% sure if they were going to die, because they were, I don't know, turning 60. So it was like, are you going to enter? Are you going to be the first generation to enter? Like the first, like the oldest of the ones who are entering, or not? And what happened, something fascinating, was that they dug the hole on Tisha B'Av, and they lay down, and they woke up the next morning. They didn't die. So they thought, maybe they miscalculated, you know, because the moon, right? 9th day, it's still in. So the 10th night again. The 11th night again. The 12th night, they did it again. The 13th night, they did it again. 14th night. But when it came to the 15th, and we know the 15th of the month, the moon is full. There's no mistaking now. The 9th has definitely passed. So then they realize the decree is over. That's one of the reasons why the 15th of Av is a Yom Tov, right? It's considered a Yom Tov. Because they really celebrated that the decree of all those dying in the desert has been finished. And you can imagine those people themselves, how excited they were, because they knew now they were going to enter into the land of Israel. So quite an amazing, I mean, it's quite a powerful thing, but what would happen every year was quite strong and quite challenging. But nevertheless, despite the harshness of it, it's actually quite amazing, as we say, that they spent 40, Hashem could have made them like a harsh prison, you know. Instead, there was this most amazing life with the mud falling, the water on the side, the clouds of glory, listening to the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. So they had the best of everything, physically, spiritually. But this was all because what Hashem wanted was more of a rehabilitation. It wasn't a punishment as such. It was to get them to be ready that when Mashiach will come, and there will be Tchias HaMeisim, right? Moshe Rabbeinu will be able to take them into the land of Israel, and they will be worthy to be in the land of Israel. So it's quite a powerful, it's a very fascinating thing that you see coming through. Let's see quickly to read the end, the last few psukim. Ani Hashem, Hashem says, I am God. Right? He's really promising that this is all going to happen. Dibarti, I have spoken. Im loy zois es alechol ha'eda ha'ro ha'zois. It's quite strong language, as we see. If I shall not do this to this entire evil assembly, Hanai Adim Alai, those who gathered against me by Midbar Hazeh in this desert, Yitamu Visham Yamusu. In this wilderness they shall cease to be, and there they shall die. It's quite a strong language. It's double. Why double? So Rabbi Akiva has an opinion which is his own unique opinion. He says that the generation this generation of the desert actually doesn't get up by Tchias HaMeisim. When it says that they die twice, it means that they're finally dead, right? They won't get up. But others disagree with Rabbi Akiva. And they say, it's funny, because Rabbi Akiva usually sees actually the good. He's always seeing the good, and he's seeing the good in the future. And yet in this case, he doesn't. And there's other opinions that say, and there's beautiful medrashim that are described, where some people, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, one of the great Tanayim, was traveling through the desert, and he heard a sound coming out of the ground. It wasn't Kairach, but it was the burial place of the people of the desert. And he understood that they will be getting up in Mirtz Hashem. When it will be Tchias HaMeisim, they will, yes, enter the land of Israel. And what merit do they have? The merit that they spent 40 years learning from Moshe, and no, doing tshuva for the sin that they did. So there's different opinions of what it is, but anyways, they shall cease to be, and there they shall die. And then it says, v'hanoshim asher shalach, now, what happens to the actual miraglim themselves? This is quite really harsh. So these people don't get so bad, but now the population. But what about the actual 10 tribes? 10 spies. V'hanoshim asher shalach Moshe l'asuras ha'aretz. So the men that Moshe Rabbeinu actually sent to spy the land, right? In Pasuk Lamed Vav. The Yoshuvu, and what did they do? They returned, V'yaleinu, and they said such a terrible report, right? They eskol ha'eda la'haitzi diba al ha'aretz, by bringing forth a report against the land, right? They complained, and they brought a terrible negative report. What will happen to them? V'yamusu ha'anoshim ba'itzei dibas ha'aretz. Those people who spread this bad, they will actually die, which means die now. Dibas ha'aretz ra'a, terrible things about the land. And let's see what it says. B'mageifa, in a plague before Hashem. And here again it specifies. V'yoshua bin Nun, v'kalev ben Yefuna, chayu. They lived, min ha'anoshim, from the men. Ha'heim, from those men. Ha'holchim losores ha'aretz, those who went to spy the land. Now, interesting, what's the mageifa? This is very disgusting, but I wanted to show you. If you look into Rashi, how did they die? So it says in page 172, and it is in Rashi, it's really quite descriptive. Rashi Lamed Ches, Rashi 37 actually, Lamed Zayin, it says like this. B'mageifa lifnei Hashem. Ba'oysa misa, with that death, that was appropriate for them. What does that mean? Mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Because what did they do? Heim chatu b'loshin, they sinned with the tongue. V'nishtarbev l'shoinam ataburam. So their tongue stretched to their navels. V'saylaim yoytzim l'shoinam, and worms came out of their tongues. V'vo'in l'teich taburam, and entered into their navels. L'kach ne'mar, that's why it says, b'mageifa, in the plague. Which, and it doesn't say b'mageifa, in a plague. Which means that it was a plague which was specifically made, so to speak, tailor-made, punishing them in accordance to what they did. So what's the idea? Let me just, interesting, because we understand the tongue, but what's the idea of the stomach? What's going on over there? So I want to show you something. As he says, this is the attributes of Hashem, that Hashem does. He measures at recompense, as we say, mida keneged mida, measure for measure. So if you look on the bottom note, it quotes from the Gemara, it tells us something interesting. It says, why were their navels involved? For they spoke against the land of Israel, which is considered the center of the world. They were punished with worms, for just as the worm attacks and destroys plants with its mouth, so too the spies attacked with their mouths. So it was a horrible death that they suffered, but they did do a terrible thing. As we know, why was it so terrible? Because of the influence. It's not just that they made a mistake in themselves. They were leaders, and they had such a bad influence on the entire Jewish people. And because of them, the rest of the people didn't even go into the land of Israel. So it's true the other people lived longer, didn't die instantly, and didn't die a horrific death in any way, didn't suffer. They didn't suffer at all. But still, they didn't get to go into the land of Israel. But they suffered, and they died immediately. So they didn't get to have the 40 years and learn with Moshe. They did. And again, why we specify Yeshua and Kalev? So it's what I said before. He says over here, look at the bottom in the Rashi 38, it says, Ma Talmud Leimer Chayu Min HaAnashim, that they lived from amongst those men. Ela Melame, but it teaches us, Shenaklu Chelkam Shel Meraglim, that they inherited, they took the portions of the spies, Ba'aretz, in the land of Israel, and Vekamu Tachteyam L'chayim, and stood in place of them for life. He says, death, obviously Rashi is saying, because it's obvious that Yeshua and Kalev wouldn't have died, they didn't say anything bad, but what we're showing is that they got a special extra reward. Now, I just want to read very quickly, good, because we could finish the perek, something terrible happens now. It's very strange, because we would think, after all this that happened, that we would be so shaken up, right? We've done something so bad, we've displayed such a lack of trust, look at the terrible ramifications, and we would think that the people would be trembling and following exactly the words of Hashem. doesn't work so simple. Let's see what happens. In Pasuk Lamites. Vayidaber Moshe Sadvarim Eila, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu gives over all of these words. El Kol B'nai Yisrael, to the entire B'nai Yisrael. V'yis'ablu ha'am ba'aid. And the people mourned exceedingly. And then what happens? Vayashkimu ba'baikar. In Pasuk Mem, they get up in the morning. Vayalu el Rosh Ha'har. And they ascend towards the mountaintop. And what do they say? Leimar. Hinenu v'alinu el hamakai masher amar Hashem ki chatanu. We are ready, and we're going to ascend to the place of which Hashem has spoken, for we have sinned. In other words, we're ready to go up. What did Hashem tell them? Don't go up. Hashem said, turn around, go into the desert. No, we're ready to go. We realize our mistake. And interesting, the commentaries tell us what they're saying really is, they don't realize how bad their mistake is. They think they can just, sometimes when you hurt somebody really badly, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. It's not so simple over here. You've just done something really beyond. And Hashem has promised and given his verdict of what's going to happen after all Moshe Rabbeinu's pleading. And yet, they're still obstinate. So let's see what happens. Vayemer Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, Lamazat atem ayver mespi Hashem. Why are you going against the word of Hashem? Why are you transgressing? You're not going to succeed. And he begs them, Al talu, don't go up. Ki ein Hashem bikir b'chem, because Hashem is not there amongst you. And do not be smitten before your enemies, which shows that if you do go up, you will be smitten, because Hashem is not there to protect you. So you have nothing that's guaranteeing your safety. Ki ha'amaleki, as we said, v'aknani sham, right there, lifneichem, u'nefaltem b'cherev, you're going to die by the sword. Ki al kein shafte me'achari Hashem, inasmuch as you have turned away from Hashem, v'lo yi Hashem imachem, Hashem will not be amongst you. And what did they do? And this is another sin, as if they didn't sin enough. Comes the next thing. It's only a few of them, a group of them. V'yapilu la'alois, but they were in transit, they were stubborn. They wouldn't give up. And what did they do? They go up El Rosh Ha'har, to the top of the mountain. V'arein bris Hashem, and the Ark of Hashem, the Ark, the bris of Hashem, Moshe, and Moshe, loy mashu b'karemach, and obviously didn't move. In other words, they didn't have not the protection of the Ark, not the protection of Moshe, not the protection of Hashem, nothing. Just they were stubborn. And of course, v'yered ha'maleki v'aknani ha'yeshev, but Bahar Hahu, and of course, Amalek and the Canaan, what did they do? They came down, the ones who dwelled on that mountain, they descended. Vayakum, and they struck them. Vayaksum, and they pounded them. Ad Hacharama, until annihilation. So those who were stubborn, after all of this, and still thought they're going to go, and they're going to make a plan, they're going to get there, they were totally destroyed. So they also died. It's a different opinion when it was exactly, perhaps it was Yud, Elul, Yud Zayin, Elul, but it was a terrible, terrible thing. Just one small thing I want to show you before we finish. Interesting, there's an interesting gematria here which shows us something fascinating about these people. Just want to see. All right. There's a few other. Okay, let me just see. So there was something important because about these Vayapilu, these people, the Hamafilin, these people who insisted on going even though they weren't meant to go. So the Baal HaTurim says that the word Vayapilu, which we said is like defiantly, that they were just like stubborn and defiant, if you spell it with two yuds, it has the same gematria as Tzlafchad. Remember Tzlafchad? Tzlafchad, we know the daughters of Tzlafchad. That's who we know. But when the daughters of Tzlafchad came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they wanted their father's portion, they said, our father died in the desert and he has no sons and we want to inherit and get a portion in the land of Israel, right? So the commentaries say, why did he die? Because nobody died in the desert, right? Remember we said they all died at 60. Nobody would have died yet, whatever. Anyways, so this interesting thing. So in other words, they said that he died in his own sin. Different opinions, whether he was the one that chopped the trees, we're going to get to that in the other parasha, or this. According to some opinions, that's why his gematria is the same as this. Maybe he was amongst these men who were so eager to enter the land of Israel, even though Moshe Rabbeinu told them not to go. And why does that actually make sense? Not only the gematria, because his love of the land was so strong that he gave that over to his daughters. And that's why they demanded a portion in the land, even though that wasn't the conventional thing to do. So it came from a good place, but it wasn't the right thing to do at all. And that's what we see here. So it's fascinating. So you see how this story has an interesting end, if you want to say. It's not an end. It doesn't end at all. But it, as we saw, it doesn't end even till today. But but interesting is that they Taka died, the spies themselves, and a few people who wanted to go up. The rest of the people lived in the desert and learned and grew, but they didn't enter the land. And also, as we say, the ramification is so strong is that Moshe himself couldn't go in. And it's all because of how they acted. So it's quite a strong, yeah, very, very strong thing. So we're going to finish over here. Next week, Amir Tashem, we'll start. We're going to do a little bit of the next part. We have a few very nice parts of the parasha. There's the mitzvah of challah. We'll learn a little bit about the mitzvah of challah, which is always nice. And there's also one more short story about the Mekosh Shetz and the Chamut Cha. We'll see. And then we'll go to Kairach. We'll see. Okay.
Yes. They went out of me.